You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD. Miraculous as it may sound, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Nicole Hale are here again.
Woo-hoo!
I know.
They were kidding about that Mayan apocalypse.
I know. weeks in a row that the entire cast is here. Strange that it is. It is Fanboy Versus the new intro. So if you're watching the pre-recorded video version, we hope you like it. Let us know what you think. It was Brian Kilby's idea, and so we thank him, and he put that together for me, actually. So I didn't have to do anything. He was just like, here you go. I was like, sweet. So
the rest of us haven't seen it, so you're probably going to see it before we do.
I know. It's a mystery to them.
Apparently.
We'll talk about it probably again next week. I doubt it, but we might. So, So here we are once again. Chris McFeely, tell us, sir, is there news?
There's not much news that I can find. I would probably have had come on here and said there was no news if like an hour ago we hadn't had some news, which was the maybe not totally surprising news based on rumors we had heard last week, and we had addressed these, I think, on the show. Mm-hmm. What was it, last week? I think we did,
yeah.
Which is that it has been confirmed now that Gail Simone will be leaving Batgirl.
Wow.
Oh.
You know, which issue?
Two thumbs down.
Which issue is she leaving, do you know?
I believe 17 is her last.
Hmm.
Wrapping up the death of the family.
Well,
guess
that...
I'll get 18 and then I'll drop it.
Well, that's, you know, you joke, but I don't even think that's not happening. Gail Simone has and this is not like a reflection on the quality or not of the comic, but it is a simple fact that Gail Simone does have an audience that she brings with her.
Yeah,
that's the reason why I'm reading it.
Yeah, I don't know how what they're going to do with her not on that book, man. That is, I dropped it a little while back, and it wasn't because of her. It was just, I don't know, I just couldn't get into
it. I'm the same. It wasn't clicking for me.
It just wasn't there. So, but, you know,
it's one of the few DC books I still get, honestly. So, I don't know. I guess I won't be buying much DC, you know?
But, you know, this is also sort of coinciding with her DC exclusive contract being up.
Mm, true.
So... I don't know if she's jumping ship or what, you know. I mean, that's her last book.
No, the word is that it has been, she confirmed herself through Twitter that she was informed via email this Wednesday that she would no longer be the writer of Batgirl.
Mm, wow.
No. Yeah, wow. That is pretty classy, DC.
God. What?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've talked about it. There are, and not gone into a lot of detail, but recently, you know, but what the hell is going on at the DC offices?
Yeah, it seems like it's been a while since there were any particularly huge. Gail Simone is like 90% of the reason that book has managed to find approval and acclaim. You know, she was. The only, I think we said this way back at the start, is like she was really the only writer that could have written Batgirl.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was an uproar that it was Barbara out of the wheelchair and Batgirl again, uproar and total. It's like Gail Simone was the only name that could be put on that book to placate people and give them like people could say I will buy this, give them a reason to actually buy it and enjoy it. It was a way to say that it was okay for them to enjoy it instead of to immediately just hate it, you know? She was the reason that the whole premise succeeded.
Yeah, and I think that that book could even continue, possibly. I mean, now that it's a thing that is in the world...
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think people are okay with it, and it could continue as a book, but if it hadn't have been for her coming in and... You know, really, I think doing about as good a job as anybody could have done to establish it.
Yeah.
There's no way it would still be a viable book.
I mean, I have essentially come to the conclusion that it just it wasn't anything to do with Gale that it wasn't clicking for me, or I don't know about you, JD, but it just, I just had no interest in Barbara. That's what I had to come to the conclusion of. And my view of it was kind of misplaced as well. I wanted to believe that the reason we were only getting vague references to how she started walking again was because Gale had a long-term mystery she was planning to unfold. So I let that go at the start, and I can't say I definitely know now, but I believe with near certainty at this point that it's simply because DC don't know themselves.
Yeah, and that's you know, getting into, like,
it's
again,
probably they just don't want to. They probably just don't want to direct it. They probably just want to be like, forget about it.
But
I'm
the
thinking.
Larger issue, and the larger issue, I think, again, is that this is not just a problem with this book that DC is having.
Yeah, yeah.
They have got their heads up their asses as far as this relaunch. There's a few characters that they bothered to care about, you know, as far as saying, okay, this is the current new history. But there's a lot of side characters that just have gotten no treatment whatsoever. And their response is, wait and see. Which basically means, we don't know either. And
I mean,
we don't want to set it down.
I was against it at the very start, because I was having trouble believing that DC were honestly going to go through with this 100% and just completely reboot the universe. Because even though, like, historically that's how they play that way, I thought maybe because the comics fandom is so insular and shrunken now these days that they wouldn't go through it. I thought the times were different. I thought they would never actually go through with it. But now here we are over a year on, and they're obviously sticking with it. So the way I'm looking at it is, wow, you really should have gone all out on this.
Yeah.
You should have rebooted. You should have started everything over from the start again. And not done. And I mean, I'm not even talking like Green Lantern, Batman, where the continuity basically picked up. I mean, like, every book should have been an origin story out of the gate. Like, everything should have started from square one again, if any of this wanted to make any sense. And so we've got stuff on Batgirl where it's like, oh, all this stuff happened, and we don't really know how it happened, but it happened. So look, it's Barbara, it's Batgirl. Look, Gail Simone, we put Gail Simone on the book. Is that okay?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, and then they're still doing it. They're going to bring Constantine, you know, fully over, and who knows what they'll adjust or change with that. I mean, there's just...
To be fair, wow. I mean, that's actually introducing somebody into the universe proper who hasn't really existed in it before.
Right. Right. But that's what I'm saying. There's still going to be a change in the character. It's still... I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is like, there's still a lot of things going on where they just don't know what's going on. Like, editorial just does not go. Now, I do know that there was a meeting or something. Like, all the DC offices had a meeting earlier in the week or something like that. And there have been some changes. The head of Vertigo was
That was another piece of news I just remember, that Karen Barger has left as the head of Vertigo as well.
But there were some meetings that I don't know that the details of those meetings at DC have still... have really come out, but I think they were meeting with like every group at every level over there. There's some talk that they may finally move their offices West Coast. That I don't know. There's all kinds of rumors. There's some moving and shaking going on behind the scenes at DC as well. So you know, we're just gonna have to, I guess, sit and wait and see what happens as far as that goes, but. Yeah, I know that there was an editorial change where they put all the Superman books, I guess, under one editor now.
These are not bad ideas.
No, that's a really good idea. Like, that's finally like, hey, these all might make sense together. You know, it makes sense. I mean, Marvel does the same thing.
Books don't make sense. Scott Loeb Dale's writing them, so they don't make any sense.
Well, that's true. That's true. Somebody asked me if... I was talking to a buddy of mine when I was gaming on Friday, and he said that he's reading Red Hood. I was like, why are you reading Red Hood? So here's the deal. So he said he's reading Red Hood. I asked him why he's reading Red Hood. Do you want to guess why he's reading Red Hood?
Controversy? Starfire?
Starfire. Thank you. Yep, that's it. So does he care about the story?
No. Nope. I pray to God it's got good art. Does it have good art on it?
I don't know who's drawing it now.
Yeah, I have no idea who's doing it now. It's just kind of like, wow. That's all. Well, better make sure you get issue 18 of DC Presents. because that's going to be a Starfire issue.
Starfire sure is on that. Yep. Orange boobies.
Woohoo! Before she just had
too
a...
Too much tanning.
Before... Tanning. Yeah. You can't tell if she's an alien or she's from Jersey. but, you know...
Yeah, bright orange and huge hair. How did you tell the difference?
Bright orange, huge hair, big knockers.
Wait, so Starfire is turning into Snooki?
I think Snooki is turning into Starfire. But I don't know. Yeah.
So what you're saying is that DC's stance in 2013 is no aliens, new origins for all heroes that were once aliens.
Right.
This one's from Jersey. Superman's from what? Like, to he's some, actually from Kansas now.
To some, Jersey might seem like a foreign place. Actually, it looks like a war zone right now, sadly. So, but yeah. Okay. Wow.
Well, we drifted off the topic there a little.
No, I mean, we're back on it. I mean, essentially, again, what we're talking about is the editorial piece, that, you know, and what's going on at DC. So, I don't know,
we
but as far
Gail on here to have her talk about this. Gail,
I think so. I think so. Someone ask her if she wants to jump on. We'll add her to the show and ask her what's up. I'm sure she would love
God,
it.
I hope if she is leaving DC, God, I hope she's going to Marvel.
Hope she
comes.
Please.
Or IDW.
Do some little Marvel.
You want to go to IDW?
Actually, I'd be happier to see her anywhere, really. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if she did something for Image, given the way Image are treating their creators so well right now.
Oh,
all
yeah.
of the creator-driven, creator-owned, brand-new number ones and things
Image.
That are coming out here. I'll give it, and she does over there a quick look, sure. Yeah.
Image has become the Horizon Labs of comic books.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically like, let us print your books, you own them, and make us money, and everybody's happy. Like, okay.
A concept.
Yeah, crazy. Right. Everybody makes money and win. Sweet. So, yeah, Image would be really good, actually. And
not that I'm not saying I wouldn't want to see, like, what Triplett suggests, a Gail Simone written Punisher or a Gail Simone She-Hulk.
I think the Punisher I would like better than She-Hulk. I love She-Hulk, but shit. I mean, Gail Simone on the Punisher could be one hell of a trip.
God.
You know what just occurs to me is we don't have any word of a new Punisher series, do we?
Thunderbolts now.
Yeah, he's just on Thunderbolts.
He's in Thunderbolts, yeah, but there's no actual word of a dedicated Marvel Now Punisher series, is there?
Mm-mm.
Nope.
Marvel,
that would be a good
one. Door's open. Get in there.
That's how you get me back to buying Punisher, because I'm done after Warzone.
Well, there's nothing for you to buy, so it's okay.
Yeah, so...
No, I'm not even getting Thunderbolts.
Yeah, dear Marvel, I am not buying Punisher after Warzone. They're like, okay.
Actually, I think there is some kind of 5-week miniseries, weekly 1-month miniseries coming up, but I forget what it's called. Didn't even read Thunderbolts number one this week. Meant to take a look at it, but didn't get a chance, and I don't really care anyway.
There you go. Good man.
Daniel Way, whoopee. Had my fill of Daniel Way ruining Deadpool for the last 5 years.
Yeah,
they gotta put Fabe Nick on Thunderbolts and bring back Zemo before I'll buy that book again.
I have to be honest. I feel I'm okay with Thunderbolts being about different things. I think it has as a concept beyond needing to just be Baron Zemo and the Masters of Evil. I'm okay with it being other things. Not this other thing. This other thing is bad and smells funny. But
are you okay with it being Fight Club? Remember Fight?
That was before it was okay to be other things.
God. Anyway, well, Marvel's doing pretty good though. So
Ellis's Thunderbolts is good. Was good, you know. So that was the kicker that was like that made it okay to be other things.
Is there any other news then?
Not that I can think of.
Not particularly comic book.
Well, when we did see a new teaser poster for Man of Steel.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And he's, as he should be, he's in handcuffs.
Yeah.
So,
Are they kryptonite handcuffs?
No, so it's just sort of for show.
I was assuming, like, any time you would ever see Superman in handcuffs, it's because he's letting them do it for some reason. That's what I looked at.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, unless it's, like, some kind of super deal. but, you know, no.
It's like, did you see a red sun over his head? Was there a red background? Remember.
No, it's hard to tell. It's a giant friggin' lens flare over most of the posters.
Yeah. Lens
was it a red, what is the red lens flare? Was it red?
No. Movie poster as crafted by Michael Bay.
J.J. Abrams.
Yeah. But yeah, J.J. Abrams. So.
That's just general geekery and not comics. But we did get the trailer for Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yes, so. We did.
Yeah. Oh, it's Sherlock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With probably
you know,
one
I mean,
of
I'm not historically a Star Trek fan, but I really enjoyed the reboot movie, time, whatever you want to call it, the new film. So I'm looking forward to the second one. And the fact that Sherlock is in it is all the more reason.
Yeah. It looks good. I'm excited about it.
This is one of those times where I'm not bothered about the fact that America has stolen someone from us.
Yeah. There's a lot of exchange going on.
I am more than willing to give you back Russell Brand any time.
Okay, but you have to take Madonna.
Oh, about that.
We're done with him. We'll give him back when we're done. We won't break him. We promise.
You better not. It's like last year, America discovered Doctor Who existed. And like, then they were like, oh, there's this other show that Doctor Who does as well. And I'm going to watch that too. Oh, Sherlock. And now you've stolen him and you've put him in a film. Two films. He's in The Hobbit as well.
Is he in The Hobbit? Wow.
Doctor Who is like exploding over here. You know why? Because I eat tons of magazines at my work with it's like Doctor Who Overlord.
Wow.
I don't want to like I can't like Doctor Who then anymore. It's it's too mainstream.
America like discovered Doctor Who in the last year and now it's it's all over fucking.
We can't help it. We have nothing to watch. All our TV shows are not original and awful, so we can't help it. You know?
Yeah, I mean, popular shows, Walking Dead, isn't even original. So, you know, Into Darkness also takes the award for having like one of the most creative Star Trek titles. It's like, oh, it's Into Darkness. Yeah, Star Trek Into Darkness.
Or some shit.
Oh, wow.
I see what you did there.
All right. That's it. We're good. Nothing of major.
That's about all the news I can think of. I'm
trying to remember. It seemed like there was one other piece of comic movie or something. About
I was
this
thinking
Amazon.
There was something else, but Jesus.
I've seen some bits.
Continuing news reports about stars of the original X-Men movie signing up to appear in Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
I think there was a rumor this week that James Marsden might be coming back. Maybe.
Wow.
I can't remember. That was a rumor.
And but there was also some stuff
about...
They
got Patrick Stewart and they got Ian McKellen. That's a fact.
Because they are not busy.
Right.
They're just doing stage. So, also I thought I saw some stuff coming out of Amazon as well. There's been some talk, casting and some role stuff coming out of that.
Themyscira High?
Yeah, Themyscira High.
Give it its proper name. Its proper name, please.
So.
And it's never going to be as awesome as Themyscira High would have been.
Right. That would have been the show, folks.
Angle Man as this geometry teacher. Like, can you? It writes itself, people.
was Hera the principal? I can't remember.
No, the principal was Cersei in disguise.
Yeah. Man, we really should get
these.
It
would turn out that her boyfriend was Ares in disguise in the thrilling season finale.
Can I vote that as like episode of the year? If we're gonna do like
right.
One that exists only in your mind.
That one or
see, this is what we need to do. We need to give up comic book reviews and just start writing a TV show.
Yeah,
TV pitch show, and we'll call it Pitch Reel.
Because they basically stole our idea for Arrow.
Pitch Reel.
sort of. Yeah, well, they took our idea for an unrelated spoof of Arrow and sort of just turned it into an Arrow.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Okay, well.
Sure. Wednesdays at 7 Central. Followed by Themyscira High. Only on the hub.
Got it.
I always say only on the hub every time I think of TV networks. No, but the CW is, of course, what would be sure.
Right, that would be the place where that would go. All right. Well, all right. Then let us get to
some comics.
Recommendations. We start with recommendations.
I like doing
recommendation. I like to say it says a lot about me that I wear pink.
You're gussing it up too much. It's not, you know, you're gussing it up too much. It should just be like, you know, recommendations.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, Chris Triplett, start us off, sir. What shocking thing will you be recommending this week?
You know, it's not fair. You guys got, like, awesome books, and, like, I can't help that I like what I like.
You're saying it's not awesome?
It is awesome, dude.
It is awesome.
In fact, I say it's amazing. I wouldn't say it's awesome.
Superior
to some of the books we're reviewing.
We would say that you might get to be the man for reading it and talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, how can we go a show without talking about Amazing Spider-Man? I mean, for God's sakes. It's like, dude, we're at 699! There's one issue left in the Amazing Spider-Man.
And also a point one. Wait, no, shut up. Don't
wait,
ruin it.
There is a point one. Wait, that's not fair. I forgot about that. God. All right, fine. But, dude, it's Amazing Spider-Man. It's number 699. It's, like, right after that issue we just got with that ending, which, you know, spoilers for a book you should have read. I don't know why you didn't read it. You know, Doc Ock and Peter Parker have switched places.
Oh!
Dun, dun, dun.
You don't say.
Doc Ock is in Peter Parker's body, and Peter Parker is in a dying Doc Ock's body, who's literally dying of a heart attack at the end of the last issue. Fast forward to this issue. People are trying to resuscitate him, trying to save him, and hey, they do, because I guess if they didn't, then, you know, that'd be a pretty, you know, quick issue, you know, one page. It's like, yeah, call it Doc Ock is dead. You know, and then that's like it, the book is over. But no, they resuscitate him, he's still alive, and then we basically, last issue was about kind of, you know, Doc Ock in Peter Parker's body and what he's doing, and now it's more kind of like Peter Parker in Doc Ock's body. And what is he going to do? We get some of the backstory, which is awesome, where we finally, you know, figure out how Doc Ock pulled this off, which, you know, J.D. was wrong. We'll just go ahead and say it.
Thanks. You couldn't just say Chris McFeely was right. It had to be clarified.
Right, but, like, super amazingly spot on, like, right? Like, totally. Like, and the Octobot did it, and it was between 697 and 698 because comics... And I read the signs and always listen to me forever and make Themyscira high because I know it'll be.
Yeah, so I was gonna say McFeely was right in the same breadth of saying JD was wrong, so that I could say both. But JD was still sorta right. I mean, because as we find out in the issue, you know, McFeely was right a little bit more. Just saying. Because, you know, the gold Octobot, you got Peter Parker literally right after the fight with the Hobgoblins. You know, it showed in the issue. But what we find out in this issue is, you know, Peter Parker's like, you know, he knows that Oct has access to Parker's memories. So he realizes, oh, yeah, that must mean I have access to Oct's memories. So he starts searching through his memories, and he figures it out that, you know, back when Peter Parker first started using Ox technology, like his helmets, it's like we were talking about, the control of Octobots. It kind of started there. He's like been mapping like Peter's mind as far back as, I don't, you guys were saying maybe 600. You think
the story here that he talks about putting his brain patterns into the Octobots and taking over the city with them, that was 600.
Yeah.
And so like every time. Yeah, like, so like every time he basically used that technology, Ock was just getting a little bit more until, you know, finally he had enough to, I guess, pull it off. And you've got like, of course, you know, even though it's like the most direst situation, Peter Parker is in this body that's dying. He can't get any help from anybody because nobody would believe such a crazy story. There's even still time for crazy comedy stuff, which I thought was great. The whole, you know, thing, I mean, him thinking about, okay, God, what is Doc Ock doing with my body right now? And you get, like, the image of him snapping Erica's neck.
Yeah. God.
And then, like, him, like, with Mary Jane, like kind of, like, grabbing her face and her saying, like, Peter, what are you doing? He's like, anything that I want, you know?
Rape is funny.
Rape,
it's just
funny.
Awful. Him poisoning Aunt May and, you know, and Jonas Sr. Even to the point of, like, him getting, like, the memories. Oh, God.
Oh. Now, okay. We do have to talk about this real quick.
A little bit. Yeah, this is what everybody was talking about.
Because there was a bit of controversy this week, and I thought that Dan Slott answered it perfectly. So describe this bottom panel for us on this page, if you would, Chris.
So, like, in the bottom panel here, we basically get him, like, searching his memories, and he's, like, he moves around, and he sees, like, Spider-Man punching him. He sees, like, Ock's dad, and then it gets to Aunt May, which, if you remember, there was a storyline in which Aunt May was gonna marry Doc Ock. So you get Aunt May in a wedding dress. She's looking at Doc Ock, and, like, you know, it's like she's looking straight at him, you know, we're viewing Aunt May, and she's saying, "Oh, Otto, stop being such a fuddy-duddy." And, like, you know, Peter Parker is thinking in his mind, Aunt May, like, with a question mark. And then she says, "No one's going to know we did this before the wedding. It'll be our little secret." Followed by Peter Parker saying, "No, stop."
Wait. I've got a bit. Triplet, that was the excellent Aunt May voice.
Yeah, that was great. Very good.
Aunt May by way of Her Majesty.
Wow. It's like, yeah.
Then we get the great little thing, which has outside door, like his door to his sale, and him like he's about to throw up or something. And then the next page, he's like, "Okay, literal mental note, that never happened. I can live the rest of my life without ever."
Okay. So, now, here's the deal. Whatever that little thing is, the secret, whatever it is in your head. Because she is in her full wedding dress, so I'm sure that there are some people that are thinking, like, hardcore perverse sexual things, which seemed to be most people's indication, like they were going to run off and have a thing, like, but
Peter Parker's pretty sick in the next panel, so
well, yeah, but wouldn't you be just as sick if you saw your Aunt May even, like, making out with Doc Ock?
Tongue wrestled with you.
Yeah, exactly. Tongue wrestled with you.
I don't have an Aunt May, right?
So, I mean, I think you could take this as, and probably as mundane as saying they kissed, you know, which is probably the indication. But for some reason, a lot of people took this to a very dark place.
I don't know. I'll admit it was the first thought I had.
Yeah.
But then that's not the first. It's exactly the same reaction I had to the last time something like this happened with May. I think Slott wrote it. I don't quite remember.
Maybe Doc Ock just has a tentacle tongue.
Wow.
The last time something like this happened to me, whenever Peter found her in bed with Jay, with Jonah's dad, and I mean, I was leafing through that comic, and my first reaction was to go, "Ah!" and I dropped the comic, you know, and I didn't drop it, like, there was nobody around, I didn't drop it theatrically, it wasn't planned, like, my body reacted, I just dropped, "Ah!" And then after,
like,
a second, I went,
"Turn the page, and spiders on the page, ah, drop it, you know, spiders on the page is gonna bite."
But then after a second, I thought, fair play to you, old girl. You know, I kind of, in many respects, I quite like the portrayal of Aunt May as a real woman with some kind of sexual appetite instead of a cardboard figure who makes wheat cakes every issue.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, but still, like, I don't think that there's any indication here that it goes horribly far.
Come on, though. I mean, he knows what he knows what his audience were gonna think.
Oh yeah. But I think it's great that he went back and was like, you know, it's really you people that are twisted and fucked up.
That's
you know?
What is really finally honing his trollitude in the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That is straight trolling, bitch.
Yeah.
I think they should go back to that at some issue, and it turns out that they were just playing checkers. You know? God. Oh, God. I can't believe Aunt May's such a horrible checker player. It almost makes me sick. I'm going to freak this.
God.
I like the fact that this is called up in response to a nice memory, though, because Doc Ock did legitimately like Aunt May. Like, he didn't love her, as I said last time. He was just marrying her in order to steal the island with the disused nuclear power plant that she had inherited. But he did like her as a person.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting, though.
Yeah. Like I was saying, we get, like, some funny stuff deep. Even though it's like deep, dark, secret stuff going on here. And yeah, I was kind of right, I'm going to say, when I said that what if that gold Octobot was actually being controlled by Peter Parker? Maybe he wasn't controlling it at that time, but we find out in this issue that he can control it. And it's walking around. He's going to use it to get some help. Because that's going to be kind of part of his plan. That, you know, he's searching Ock's memories to find out that he's if he's got just a super secret plan, you know, because, like, he's got Doc Ock, you know, he's probably got a billion ways to escape and survive and all this, so he's going to use one of his plans to get out. We get some stuff with the Lizard, because, you know, his cell's right next door to the Lizard's. And we finally, you know, Peter finds out that, you know, that it's Kurt Connors that's in the Lizard's body. Did the cure work?
I'm kind of torn about that because in one sense it kind of was interesting that, you know, the Lizard was going to sit down there, you know, essentially forever, you know, torturing himself living inside that Lizard body. And he really just intended to tell someone to sort of get it off his chest that he thought was going to die. But now he's told Peter inadvertently.
But I like this, and I like it for how it actually ends up, you know, the end of the issue, because, you know, basically, you know, Doc Ock, or, you know, I want to call him Doc Ock because, dude, look at the dude's face. Jeez. Yeah. Peter Parker in Doc Ock's body, you know, initiates a plan, and basically with the, you know, the Octobot calls, like, I guess some reinforcements. It doesn't really kind of show you at the beginning, but then you find out Hydro Man,
yeah,
you know, breaks in.
Hydro
get him out.
Man.
Scorpion, the Trapster, you know, a whole
you
bunch
know,
of guys.
You know,
because
it's like Scorpion. You know, because we've said a couple of times, like, I wonder what Scorpion's doing these days.
Seen a Scorpion in a while. It's nice to see him get in the press again.
Because we haven't seen him since the very beginning of Spider Island. Like, of that, you know, sort of story arc.
Yeah, big time, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a what was the last time that we saw him? It was the Spider Slayer thing, right?
Yeah, it was the Spider Slayer thing. Yeah.
So, yeah. But, so, yeah, he gets these guys, making them think, oh, they're going to get, like, a big pay to come and rescue him and save him. And so they're taking him out of the cell, and they think that he's reforming the Sinister Six. Like, he's going to form the Sinister Six with the Trapster. Come on, seriously. I'm just saying.
I love all Peter's stuff.
Hey, the Trapster was good enough for the Wizard.
He was also called Pasty Pot Pete.
I love this Paste Pot Pete bit where he's like, I can't take this guy seriously. His name used to be Paste Pot Pete. It's not going to...
But the thing with the Lizard that pays off for me is, so they're leaving, and, like, all the villains, you know, like Spider Slayer and Morbius are, like, begging for him to take him with them, and then Lizard doesn't say anything, and then he says, oh, you know, Connors, I could use a good man about now, and, you know, will you join us, you know? And it's like, that's kind of interesting to me. Where are they going to go with that, you know? Because, like, he knows that he just told him that, you know, I'm really, you know, for Connors, stuck in this body, you know? You know, I'm not a bad guy. I'm just, you know, stuck in the Lizard body. I got to tell somebody. And he just told him that. So is that, like, him? Because he even does this little part where he just kind of, like, he looks at him. Is he knowing that that's Spider-Man now? I mean, is that the reason he did that? Is that...
No, like, I think it seemed to me like it had more to do, like, he thought he might get out, you know? Like, I think he had resigned himself that he was going to be stuck down here permanently, and for just a moment seemed like he might get out and then didn't, especially with this last panel where his eyes are kind of...
Yeah, they go all Lizard.
Yeah.
I was just kind of thinking that, well, maybe this is the thing where, like, you know, he's got all these guys that think he's Doc Ock. He needs an ally. Here's this guy that, you know, is his friend, basically, when he's not the Lizard, just admitting that now he is the Lizard. But, you know, why would he tell him that? Why would he, when they're leaving, why would he say, hey, Connors, do you want to come with us? I need a good man with me.
Well, because, like he said, he's thinking, he's more thinking, you know, he even said it the next line, that he wasn't really thinking. You know, it's just like he had a momentary thought, like he might get him out too. But, you know.
Connors doesn't want
to. I think they're going to follow up with that. I think there's going to be something coming out of that. So that's interesting.
I mean, Spidey will have to follow up on it somehow, but Connors doesn't want to be free.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, it was a cool issue. I like the idea of the, everything being, like, from, like, you know, we saw none of the Spider-Man stuff. In it. Like, you know, what is Doc Ock doing in his body?
Yeah.
We got none of that in that issue. And it was just kind of cool because it was, like, the other side. You know, one side was... This is what Doc Ock was doing in Spider-Man's body. This side, it's what he's doing in, you know, Doc Ock's body. And then, like, 700, I assume, will everything, the shit will hit the fans.
Oh, 700 minutes to live, yeah.
But, I don't know.
Yeah. It's going to be a ride, man. Going to be a ride.
Good stuff.
I mean, some people were talking about spoilers for this issue. I didn't think there was anything that was particularly spoily. I mean, I guess if you were,
I
like...
know. Just finding out
just
how it happened.
If you could read the last issue. If you didn't read the last issue, then...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But God, if you didn't read the last issue, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Is what I would be saying. So. The spoiler is, what is wrong with you?
Spoilers? You're wrong.
But yeah. That's Spider-Man. I still like it. Surprise.
Wow. So, awesome.
Fun thing about this issue, actually, just before we go. Last page. Letters page. Bottom left, that's a letter from one of my customers.
Really?
Yeah. So there you go.
Awesome.
Cool, yeah.
Very cool. See, it's all connected. It's a very small world.
Oh, it's a very incestuous little world. That's right. Yeah. That's the one.
Cool.
Neat. You know, I never wrote a comic. Not once. Never sent a letter.
Sent a letter. Oh, yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, I never wrote and sent a letter to any comic, like, period. Email, letter, or anything, ever. As much
you know,
as
it's so easy to these days with email.
Yeah,
I mean,
I know.
Never done it, you know?
Yeah.
And there's so few comics have letters, bitches, you figure if you'd send one, you'd probably get it printed because there are so few.
Yeah.
But yet, still, you don't do it. It's like, eh.
Yeah, it used to be a real pain in the ass. No. Super easy.
Got to draw my letter art. Got to do some letter art. Put some Hobgoblin on it or something. Never mind.
I just noticed on the front of this, the top tile where it says "Celebrating 50 Years of Shattered." I just noticed that.
Yeah.
Had they been doing that for the rest of the issue?
It was broken in the last one, and then now it's shattered apart.
Oh, huh. Okay. I didn't notice that until now. Like, oh, cool.
Yeah. All right. Moving on then. Thank you, sir. Nicole?
All right. Well, you can't see my video, but if you see my avatar, one of the characters I have is who I'm going to be talking about. So I'm going to be talking about the newest Deadpool because we've talked about it every issue since the reboot. Because
it's awesome!
It continues to be.
Wait, Deadpool is awesome? What? Huh?
Yeah,
stop
I know.
It's been a while.
Yeah. It's amazing. Well, because ever since I started the show with you guys, I don't remember talking about Deadpool until the reboot. So,
fact.
Is it a fact?
Oh, yeah. I don't think we talked about a single issue of Deadpool.
Mm-mm.
But this reboot is doing an amazing job. Of course, he's still fighting off dead presidents.
Woo!
He has Ben Franklin on his side, but since he's Canadian, he doesn't understand that Ben Franklin was never a president.
I don't think that being Canadian really, like...
I don't know your history.
Yeah, I think that's Deadpool's excuse, but even if Deadpool was American, I don't think he would still know that.
True.
There's a lot of Americans that don't realize that Benjamin Franklin wasn't a president.
Because he's on the $100 bill that everyone says it's dead presidents, but he's never a dead president.
Exactly.
But but in this issue, you realize he's the only one that can see Ben Franklin, so...
Well... I think Doctor Strange can, too, but he's really hard ignoring him. Yeah. Which we find out why.
Doctor Strange is awesome in this.
God, he is.
I'm really liking him. The thing is, they're trying to get Doctor Strange to help him, you know, see what's going on with Madman and that's the purpose. I think that's the best part of the comic book is Madman's story. It's only a couple pages where they talk about his past. When he was little, he had a hamster that passed away, and his mother gave it to him, who recently passed away before. And he was so upset that this hamster died. He just wanted to love it, and he pretty much loved it so much that he came back to life. And so,
this is the necromancer.
Hey, he is not crazy. His name is Michael.
Powers going.
He has a name. His name is Michael.
Yes. Yeah, Matt.
Michael.
Yes.
Michael.
Michael Madman.
Yes.
Madman is just something somebody called him. This is like the dark side debate from Beast Wars.
Yeah.
God.
But I thought that was a good story. You know, you hear about his past and what's going on with him and why he's with S.H.I.E.L.D. And so, because they were thinking that his S.H.I.E.L.D. jacket was just something.
All of us did. I mean, that was like all of us thought that he
was
just
on there.
We thought he was just some nut that, like, you know, got a S.H.I.E.L.D. jacket. But when he says that, you can see that there's clearly like an all-seeing eye over the S.H.I.E.L.D. logo on his S.H.I.E.L.D. jacket. So yeah, it's got to be
I didn't notice that until now. I'm like, oh,
occult,
that's cool.
Version of, you know, a cult subgroup of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah.
I'm sure S.H.I.E.L.D. has a division for that.
Hell yeah, it does.
Oh, aren't there like an occult group, like Armor or something, is that what it's called?
Hey, that's their alternate reality more. That's what the AR stands for, is alternate reality.
Well, they were fighting zombies and Marvel zombies, so that's all I can tell you.
Yeah, they were Armor, so.
S.H.I.E.L.D.'s for dealing with alternate realities rather than magic.
Mm.
I can't wait. They make one where the group is just called Gun. I want to know what Gun is.
Probably the magic division of S.H.I.E.L.D. is just called Wand or something. Because we've got S.H.I.E.L.D., we've got Sword for aliens, we've got Armor for alternate realities.
God.
So we're going to just have Wand or Cod Piece or something.
God. Oh, no. There's some good lines in this, too, though, where it's like, hey, George, guess what time it is? 2:30.
Because George Washington in the last episode had his wooden teeth knocked out, so he's going to a dentist to get his teeth redone.
Oh my god.
Yeah. George Washington had to get his teeth redone. So that's where that joke comes
from.
Brilliant.
That poor dentist.
Well, and there was, for the first time, there was a fourth wall breaking in this issue. But it was three panels and, like, then never really gone back to, so.
Yeah. They're like, who are you talking to? I'm talking to them. Who's them? It's too much to explain in one panel.
God.
Yeah, that's all I need from Thurber.
Yeah. Still. Although I think my favorite historical part, you know, the semi-historical part of this was the Gerald Ford moment at the end.
Oh, yes.
Because it's like, if you don't know a lot about, like, American presidents,
are you talking about the UFO thing?
The end where after they've got Marine One and they're going to leave and Nixon doesn't want to leave because they're right in front of Watergate. Something to know about Gerald Ford is that he was known as being a very clumsy person. And it's just because, like, there were two different instances where he was caught on camera tripping. So, you know, there became all of these jokes. In particular, Chevy Chase did a lot of them.
Chevy
Chase. Yeah, where it was Ford falling. And so there's this bit where they're at the back of Marine One, and he's going to go to get into it and trips. And he's like, whoopsie! Oh, fiddlesticks.
Fiddlesticks.
And, like,
he gets chopped up by the rotary blade.
Yeah, from the torso up, gets chopped up.
I can actually get a look at this issue.
Oh, my God. It's hilarious.
It's fun. So, yeah, so he's taking out Gerald Ford in this one. He also takes on Richard Nixon at the Watergate Hotel.
God.
I mean, it's a fun series that they're going through. I think is there two more issues in this storyline?
Possibly, but there are a couple of things, like, like when Doctor Strange looks at Deadpool with the eye of Agamotto, he says he notices something and then says it to Deadpool at the end, but we don't hear what it is. So I would
like to believe that, as much as I'm enjoying these first couple of issues, I would like to believe that, and I know they are like comedians as well, but the best Deadpool is Deadpool that manages to balance the comedy with the darkness. And I would like to believe that these writers do have the capability to write some comparatively straight dark Deadpool stories as well. You know, I just want Joe Kelly back, really, is what I want.
Yeah.
These guys are doing a damn good impression of funny Joe Kelly right now. But if I want to
see... What is Joe Kelly even doing now? I don't even know what his last book was.
I don't know what he's doing these days. I think he's working in television.
But, now you mentioned...
I think they might do something with Preston.
I don't know. We'll see. You never know, with a Deadpool story, what characters are going to stick and what's not. But the one moment I want to talk about on this, which there's two where it's like one of the other presidents says something out and the editor's note is, oh, just Google it. And but in this...
A couple of those moments.
There's a scene where Doctor Strange is trying to lock on to this necromancer, to Michael. Michael is his name. He's saying, you know, be ready, because as soon as I find it, we'll have to go. And so the guy starts to cast a spell, and he's like, I've got it. All right, here we go. And Mr. Franklin, I've not forgotten or forgiven you for sleeping with my girlfriend. You can walk. And the editor's note says, Ben slept with Clea back in the 70s. Look it up. So what is going on here, Chris McFeely?
That's about it. Dr. Strange went traveling through time, and Ben Franklin was known for the ladies.
He mentioned that in the comic book, you know, because he's also apparently a chubby chaser, because he's after Agent French.
I think it's just women in general. But,
women in general, I think.
But I think I went back and saw some of those panels.
Yeah.
I think didn't he get her drunk? Yeah,
nice guy. I think actually that immediately thereafter, some of that might have been retconned away through cosmic hoodoo. I'm not sure.
Wow. Well, it wouldn't surprise me. But although Ben Franklin's like, oh, come on. So it does give that impression that Doctor Strange, of course, could see Ben Franklin the whole time. He was just sort of ignoring him.
And actually Deadpool names his sword as well in this issue.
He gets a sword that Doctor Strange magically imbues with the ability to kill these presidents.
Yep, and its name is Nancy.
Well, first he names it Vito, the magic sword, and then they tell him that swords should traditionally be named after women. So he's like, well, how does Nancy sound?
So grab your Nancy and let's get fighting.
And he fought Reagan with it.
What?
Did he in the last issue?
Did he proceed to then fight Reagan with
it? No.
Reagan hasn't shown up yet.
Yeah.
No, Reagan has not shown up yet.
Not since that big scene with all the presidents hanging out.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, let's see how that one goes.
Yeah. This is Nixon. Ford, who else is
there? Nixon and Ford, I think, are the only two that get killed off.
Yeah, they have Abraham Lincoln and George Washington. They're the ones that are at the dentist's office.
Yeah. It's like, you got killed by an actor. He got the drop on me!
Yeah, because, well, the thing is, Washington and Lincoln are planning something, but you don't know what they're planning.
But apparently it involves a space station.
Yeah.
Presidents in space.
Yeah.
So those two are the reason why this is happening. So look out, on the lookout for Lincoln and Washington.
God.
And of course, he also mentioned that he still has 35 dead presidents to kill.
Well, at first, I don't know that he knew how many there were, but.
Barack Obama's our 44th. There is four still alive. So that would be 40 dead presidents.
Of course, if they kill one of them off in the book, then
Yeah. They might. Yeah. So they have he's killed five, so he has 35 to go.
Bolster.
How's their math at Fanboy Versus people?
Nice.
Put maths in my comics.
Man. I don't know if we can handle that. So. All right, cool.
You guys should be reading it. It's actually
really good. It is refreshing
awesome.
It is refreshing to actually read. I laughed so many times reading the book, and there's a lot of just little gags in the book that are just really nice, but they're not the same kind of just messed up Deadpool talking to himself kind of jokes. I mean, they're really just funny bits and stuff.
Ben Franklin has a personality, which I never thought I'd see. It's just a whole different image of presidents.
The funny thing is, like, I've read a lot and known a lot about Ben Franklin, especially if you've seen, like, the play 1776, the musical.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's pretty much spot on from that, so.
So does he want to make the turkey, the bird or something in it? Because I remember that from 1776.
That was in 1776. He's also a bit of a womanizer in that as well, so. Yeah. There is a whole sequence in 1776 where Adams and Franklin sing a song about having sex, but it's under the guise of playing a violin. So
that's a strange thing.
Don't try to educate me.
Yeah.
So
talking about theater.
I'm just excited to see what other presidents show up.
I'm just excited to see where this whole book goes. I mean, just by the fact that there's something that Doctor Strange told him gives me the idea that there's going to be some larger story and some more things going on. So
Doctor Strange told him something. He's like, what did he say? Oh, that's not good or something. Oh,
yeah,
that?
Something like that. And in fact,
that's not good.
The other agent was like, what? He's like, nothing. It's time for my annual mammogram.
He says right here, Agent Preston's like, is everything all right? He's like, oh, it's personal. It's just almost time for my yearly mammogram.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
You guys need to read this.
It's really good. Okay.
It's one of those ones that I'm looking forward to picking up every other week. So,
as soon as I stop my no Deadpools policy, I might read that book. But right now, I don't know.
See, so that's the thing. I told myself I'd never read Deadpool because it got out of hand. It just went. I mean, every single little spinoff, every little other series and stuff. And I'm just like, I can't do it. But this reboot, it's worth
one
it,
book.
The reboot.
He's a character that I could never see supporting his own book, but it's like I was fine if he showed up every once in a while in a comic. So it's great that you guys like it so much. It sounds cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun.
Get back to Deadpool Triplet.
Okay. I am going to try to rush through a few books here real quick so that we can get to Avengers and not take up too much of everybody's time. First one, surprising thing. I just have to give it a little bit of credit just because we've been talking about how awful it is. Moloch was not awful.
Moloch number one.
Moloch number one was not awful.
I was telling you, dude, Moloch's going to be my miniseries of the year. I keep telling you that.
Well, I wouldn't say it was great, but I thought it did at least a good job of keeping itself in the world, telling stories that weren't told in the book and yet mentioning some things that were, you know, where you talked about, hey, where's that laser light mirror or anything?
The solar mirror was there. And it was in this.
I
smiled at that. But
yeah.
I was like, what is the point?
I like how he was a magician when he was a boy and then he just like would like kill people.
Yeah.
In boxes.
But I mean,
like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, did this deserve a book? No. But was it awful? No. So
I wasn't awful.
Sometimes I like to give credit where it's due. I don't want to go into more detail than that, but I'll just say it wasn't awful.
You're just saying that it was the best miniseries of the year is what you're saying.
Not that. No.
It certainly was the best comic starring Moloch.
It was
there have been surprisingly quite a few.
Yeah. Right. Another thing I want to mention is something that's gone by wayside probably for a lot of people, but that is Earth 2. DC. They finally got past this Grundy story with issue 6. And issue 7 has, like, really picked up. You know, like, with this issue, like, things have really started to take off, where, you know, we're getting a little bit more character backstory. This, you know, the interaction between this Sloane and God, I can never remember this guy's name. Amaz? Crip.
You know, I read the book, but I haven't read the new issue, so I can't tell you. But I know what you're talking about, though.
But, you know, it's sort of like what seems to be like the beginning of a checkmate organization on Earth 2. This group of Sandmen, you know, as infiltrators. We finally have Michael Holt showing back up after he got ported to Earth 2.
After DC decided that he came from Earth 2.
After his book got canceled, right? Didn't
yeah.
he have a
yeah,
he had a book.
Yeah, funny that,
I keep
yeah.
forgetting that he had a book. That's did, pretty yeah. sad.
One of the single most forgettable books of the New 52, next to Blackhawks, probably.
But he got basically picked up by this guy that looks like he may be starting sort of like a checkmate organization. But we found out that there's a Red Tornado. This here as well, a female Red Tornado that's being rebuilt.
A female Red Tornado.
Yeah, female Red Tornado.
Because we need more Red Tornadoes in our lives.
Well, there isn't one so, right now, so yeah, you do. let's see, and also, I mean, there's just like a ton of teases for like other characters that may be showing up, other wonders, as they call it, on this world.
Are you still liking the book? I mean, I'm kind of surprised that's a book you still get.
I was waiting for this Grundy story to get over with. And now that it has, and it's become a lot more about espionage and shadow play and that kind of thing, so I'm liking it. Khan is this other character's name.
I'm kind of teetering on if I'm going to keep it or not. Like, I want to keep getting it because I got want something with Justice Society characters in it. It's just it's not my Justice Society.
Well, if you haven't read issue 6, read issue 6.
And yeah, I read the newest one. I read the end of the Grundy thing. That was the last issue I read.
And that's why I say issue 6 is where it kind of starts to pick up. You know, it seems like we're really kind of getting a better idea of these characters, a better interplay of what the world is going to be structured like. So, if you like the sort of, you know, checkmate, and if you like, you know, a little bit more political interplay with your hero play, I think this may be, you know, this may be it. And also, like I said, we're going to probably see some cross-world stuff starting to happen now that Michael Holt is out of the control of Terry Sloane and is going to be with this other sort of sub-organization.
Terry Sloane is a dick in that comic.
He is. You He's know? A total bastard.
He's such a dick.
It's so great. He's just a complete dick, and I absolutely love it. I was trying to stall for a second for Chris Mafila to come back, because I figured he'd want to chime in on this before Watchmen story, but I guess I'll go ahead and start talking about it, and if he wants to cut back. Damn, this issue is good.
Minutemen?
I mean, yeah, Minutemen. If you've not been reading Minutemen, you're doing yourself a disservice. You know, it's probably the top book that's worth it out of before Watchmen.
Oh, there's no probably it is. There's yeah. no probably it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, it is. Probably it is. Okay, yeah.
I mean, because, like, for story and for art is Minutemen. I thought, like, for Silk Spectre, that the story was fine, but, dude, the art is what shined in Silk Spectre.
Yeah.
And O'Connor's art, great.
Yeah. And but this, like, not only is the art great, but so is the story. You know, little things like, you know, Silk Spectre sleeping with Eddie on her wedding day. You know.
Oh, she's probably just powdering her nose.
Yeah.
That's classy right there.
She might be doing that while Ed's got his dick all the way in her, but
Oh god.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, you can't really see her nose in that shot, I guess, but yeah.
You get the stuff with Dollar Bill, you know, you get that page with Dollar Bill.
This is the one little thing about Dollar Bill.
$4 bill, yeah.
But the main thrust of this story is a story that revolves around two people who dress up as actual comic book characters and come to the Minutemen for help with this story, you know, with what seems to be some plutonium or uranium that had been stolen. And they're basically making, you know, what we would refer to as like a dirty bomb.
And the comic characters, Blue Coat and Scout, by the way.
Yeah.
I think we should mention their names because those are great.
Yeah. It seems to be sort of like a Captain America, Bucky sort of knockoff almost. But, I mean, I don't want to go into too much detail on this story because the story itself is really good. But I think the interesting thing about it more so is that, you know, I think it was the second issue of Minutemen that had the great story where they thought there were munitions in this warehouse and they broke in and it turned out it was like fireworks and it made this big brouhaha.
Yeah.
And then so the government decided that they were going to, you know, fudge the story a little bit, and they made it, you know, this big event for the Minutemen where they really gave them credit for doing something that they didn't do. In this, almost the exact opposite happens. The Minutemen charge in to, you know, this situation and, you know, really sort of end up saving the day. I mean, saving New York, saving the city, saving countless lives, and the government covers it up. And it ends up, whereas the start of the team's notoriety was a lie, the end of the team was a lie as well, where it started with a lie about them doing something amazing that they didn't really do. It ends with them doing something actually amazing and then not getting to, you know, get the renown for it.
The credit.
The credit, yeah. I mean, it was like it didn't even happen at all.
I love one of these lines at the end of the issue, and I kind of don't want to read it because I don't want to spoil it for somebody, but it's the line about, he says some dope forgets his watch and becomes a god on
yes.
Earth.
Yeah.
Say the rest of it, but the rest of it, you know, it's just great.
Well, I mean, I think you can say, I mean, there's this we can spoil this. This is not horrible. I think I've spoiled it enough as it is.
Spoiler alert! We need to get like a little.
This kid ends up basically stopping. You know, he takes the lid off of what would be this dirty bomb and saves the city, but himself gets completely irradiated. And Hollis is thinking about it, and the kid's like in the hospital. I mean, the end line before is that, you know, it took the kid less than 6 seconds to take the lid off of the bomb, and he would be dead in as many days. And, you know, as the kid is in the hospital, he said, I stayed with him those days when I wasn't on duty. I lied to him. I told him the whole world knew what heroes he and his father had been. His suffering was unbearable. The radiation did horrible things to his body. Looking back, I've realized this is why I have some kind of vague disdain for Dr. Manhattan. Some dope forgets his watch and becomes a god on Earth. Some poor kid saves New York City, and he gets to suffer and die alone and forgotten. What kind of sick world is this? And it's just, you know, I mean, perfect. You know, it's absolutely perfect. And even in that third panel, if the kid looks normal, and then in the third panel, you see Hollis kind of in a different shirt. But the kid's hand is obviously red and swollen from the radiation sickness, and his face, mm-hmm. you know, is just covered with marks.
Awful.
And yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Radiation sickness, if you didn't know this, is awful to die from. It's just horrible.
It doesn't sound like any fun, that's for sure.
No.
Oh.
But if you thought that wasn't enough, then the end of this gets really twisted, and I don't even know if I understand the full implication.
No, I can't believe that what the immediate assumption you would make on this can possibly be the correct one.
Yeah.
I totally wanted to hear what you guys he said about this.
I'm
thinking back to something you guys were saying back in what issue?
Yeah.
Two.
Yeah, that was definitely prominent in my mind then when I was reading this. It was like, I have to assume he's deliberately trying to evoke that unpleasant connection. I don't know why he would want to do that deliberately, because I can't believe a writer would go there in this day and age.
Yeah.
I have to believe this is deliberately misleading, but the fact that you would want to even deliberately mislead anybody to that conclusion is so horrible. It's one of those things that's just so horrible that it's one of those unpleasant situations where you are left wondering, is it the comic or is it the writer? And I have to say, issue 6 is going to... to be honest, it could make or break this miniseries, depending
on
how this turns out.
Yeah.
It really could.
Yeah. For all of the great things that it's done, if what is being implied is the case, I think it would just kill it for me.
I think I would agree with you. I think it would leave a terrible taste in my mouth.
Is this something that you don't want to spoil? You guys don't even want to mention?
I think we should maybe just leave that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that other people should read. I mean, it's really hard. It would take a long time, one, to describe, and two, it just...
If you've read issue 2 and you heard us talking about it, then you probably know what we're talking about, even if you haven't read this.
Yeah, but it's definitely... I mean, either way, it's screwed up. And it's either going to be screwed up in a way that is okay as far as the story goes, or it's going to be screwed up in a way that, you know, as Chris said, that it's just going to ruin.
It's probably whatever you think it is the worst thing you can think of, because it is a story about screwed up superheroes. You know?
Oh, yeah, but this is too far. I mean, this is way farther than even Alan Moore, I think, was.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, Alan Moore made some pretty twisted implications, but this is far beyond even that, you know. So I don't know. We'll see.
It'll be interesting to see the next issue.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to be waiting for that. I do have to say, like, I didn't mention it before because Chris McFeely wasn't here, but this first four panel is so brilliant to me, I can't stop looking at it.
Oh, the circles.
The circles, the spiral, and especially because they talk about the tickling of the dragon's tail, and that last frame is like, I can see it as a clock, as the countdown to extinction clock, or I can see it as a dragon's eye, and like at the same time, and it's just, damn you.
You know, even like the panels of, you know, the basically them going their four separate ways, and it looks like a clock. I mean, that's cool looking too.
That's a great set of panels. That one.
Yeah. So awesome. Okay. Well, anyway, Minutemen, if you haven't checked it out, you should. And like I said, we'll be back to talk about this.
Or depending on next issue, maybe you shouldn't have.
Maybe you shouldn't have. Or maybe
So it turns out that Minutemen isn't the best when it actually is Moloch.
It may have. You know? No. If anything, we'll just hand it over to Silk Spectre and move on. So, all right, I'm done. Chris McFeely, take us then to your recommendation so we can get to Avengers.
I'm going to recommend Action Comics for this week. Haven't mentioned Action Comics in a couple of weeks, but this is Morrison's penultimate issue, so it really does have to be the one that gets recommended, because this is that one issue that always happens eventually in every Grant Morrison run where things stop and come together and explanations are given and things finally start to make sense.
Oh, so good.
It's like, you know, while, you know, the last couple of issues of Action Comics have maybe not been supremely worth talking about, they've still been fine reads, but like this is an excellent issue of Action Comics. This is Morrison at his tripped out best once again. Last issue we saw Superman fight the Multitude on Mars. And then in this issue we find out that wasn't even happening. That was a look into the future that Superman was remembering,
Remembering from the future.
he is a Superman. He is Superman.
But that happens, as Mrs. Nixley explains in this one, because Vindictivix is closing in on the Little Man, as we now know, is closing in on Superman, and I quote, Vindictivix disturbs time when he closes in for the kill. And I read another review that summed that up very nicely, where it, as you're reading it, you nod your head and go, ah, yes, I see, when it actually makes no sense whatsoever. But it, you're led along by the story into accepting that that's how it goes. So what we have going on here is actually three separate, what's kind of like four separate things that are happening. We have Nixley explaining to Superman in the present day about Vindictivix. We have the anti-Superman army hunting Superman at some point in the future, which is why the story is called Superman at the End of Days. And we have only briefly looked upon is Clark and Lana at their prom when Clark was young, when Clark got the news on the day that both his parents had died. And
I saw his parents alive in that sequence because I was like, how long, you know? Because like in this version, he grew up in an orphanage at some point. He went to live in an orphanage. Am I remembering that correctly?
I don't think so.
I was thinking his parents died a lot earlier in his life. You know, like maybe he spent a lot of time in an orphanage or something.
We've seen his dad be with him when he was learning his powers and things in earlier issues. I don't think anything like that ever happened. It's implied here anyway. Well, it's not implied. It's shown they died in a car accident. And we find out that this is all cases of Vindictivix attacking Superman at different times in his life simultaneously. He's attacking Superman all through his life at once. He killed his parents. He's having the anti-Superman army hunt him down at the end of time. And he is, he's doing something in the present, which we don't see because it is primarily Nixley telling him the story of Vindictivix and Mr. Mixes Pitlick in the fifth dimension. We know she was a princess of the fifth dimension and that Mr. Mixes Pitlick was her lover. And it turns out here, we find out in the course of this issue that Mixes Pitlick bested, shall we say, Vindictivix, like as the favorite jester, performer, entertainer of the king. And so seeking revenge, Vindictivix tried to kill Mixes Pitlick, but accidentally killed the king instead. And he went insane.
Mm-hmm.
The reason he's hunting Superman is because he used the million pointed multi-spear.
Oh!
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes,
with fractals. Yes. It's pointed on, with just, fractals.
Just this sentence here. Driven by jealous rage, he stole three sublime weapons left over from Chroma Conflict 2. The Nothing Coat, the Imaginator, the million-pointed multi-spear.
The Nothing Coat.
Yes, we want Grant Morrison to continue to write Action Comics. Yes, so, to all of that.
When he attempted to kill the king, or when he accidentally killed the king, the king, he killed him accidentally because the king was trying on Mixie's derby hat. And we'd seen earlier in the story that it was from Mixie's derby hat that he pulled all of his magic, like magicians do. And the thing that Mixie did to entertain the king was that he did what Mixie does. He visited worlds all through the multiverse and annoyed their champions. What is it? What were the Super Turtle of Jazur, Randazulian's Electo, Cosmicus, Professor Power, Vartox, the Word of Word, and it's all the name saying backwards challenge. So whenever he stabs the king, the hat goes on fire as well, and all of these worlds across the universe, and I guess it's more the universe than the multiverse, they are all struck simultaneously by the fractal points of the multi-spear, and they manifest as the multitude. And it's on two worlds, which is Krypton and Mars in last issue, that Superman and his father turn back the multi-spear, and Vindictivix seeks revenge now upon Superman for that thwarting.
Because it burned his hand, it burned his arm.
It's ruined his arm shattered the spear and broken the Nothing Coat, and he's just it's funny that the arm, because we've not seen any implication that there's anything wrong with the little man's arm. The ruined arm, I'm going to assume that's going somewhere because it's never been like a signposted idea before now.
It was in the last issue.
Was it?
I believe it was. I thought there was, unless it was in this, because I read these back to back. And there was a sequence, I thought, where in the end of the last issue, when they find the little man under the rubble, his arm is destroyed. His arm is, and he tells him that he did it. You know that.
I would have to go back and look at it again.
Yeah, it is in the last issue.
And okay. There's a backup strip in here by Sholey Fish just fleshing out the relationship between Mrs. Pitlick and Gispintlesses and Mrs. Nixley, whatever you want to call it. And that's quite sweet as well. But, you know, this is real penultimate stuff, and it truly is the issue that's gonna tie all of Morrison's Action Comics together. Would mean absolutely nothing if you hadn't read anything up until now. You know, I saw some people talking about how they found this was confusing and they hated it and they didn't understand it.
What?
And I had this revelation and I was like, oh my God, that's me when I got to the end of Final Crisis.
Yes!
You know, I was like, because I was like, if you have paid even the slightest fraction of attention while reading Action Comics over the last 14 months, this is not confusing.
Yeah, this actually makes everything make sense.
This is like with an understanding. I know I've said it before. I'm late to the party in that I get how Grant Morrison works now, and I picked up Action Comics because I figured if he was going to do something like he did with his Batman again, I wanted to be in on the ground floor for it, and I really have been because he really was.
Yeah,
this is shall we say very rewarding. I love the fact that. Everything we saw set up, first of all, we had the flash-forward issues, which introduced the anti-Superman army. Then everything from then until now has been about the individual members of the army being recruited by Vindictivix. And I love the fact that that's not... that it is, but it isn't the payoff that they actually all get together and attack him, because they don't get together and actually attack him until the future sometime.
Yeah,
it's not even happening to him in the now of the comic. We are seeing it, and it is serving as the big explosive end of Morrison's story because it's been leading towards that, and you would assume it has been. But it's not even happening in the now. I love that. It's so mental.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's not even part of the present story. It's.
It's like he's not going to beat them in the now. You know, when the present, the now of the comic reaches its conclusion, that's all still going to have to come for Superman yet. I'm really looking forward with some degree of sadness actually to next issue because, I mean, there have been some issues of Action Comics certainly that weren't as thrilling as others. But when it all comes together like this, you really do see how it is very rewarding, and it is going to form a solid, just like 16-issue body of work where Grant Morrison literally, in this case, got to do Superman from beginning to absolute end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we figured back at the outset when we got to the end of the first story with the Collector of Worlds and everything, we were seeing like that little... pocketed 6-issue conversion of Golden Age Socialist Superman to Silver Age Icon, and we never really moved beyond that. Sort of like the it's kind of become a little grayer. I really still feel that that's what the first story arc was about, and this one has then been about the anti-Superman army. Unless, of course, I mean, the next issue is called The Second Death of Superman, so maybe we are transitioning from the Silver Age up into the Bronze Age with the death of Superman here in the next one. Through this narrative trickery, we have seen Superman from his literal beginnings as Superman up to the very end of to Superman at the end of days.
But not only that, like, here's the really brilliant thing is we've already established in here that Superman's going to face Mitzelplick.
Yeah, sooner or later. That's it. It's not even. It's like I was a little worried about that because of the way that Mrs. Pitlick is like the one missing guy from Superman's Rogues Gallery. He's like sort of like the Toy Man or the Parasite or something. Like Morrison has worked in all of Superman's truly classic enemies from the eras that he has been emulating a journey through the eras of comics, from the Kryptonite Man to the Legion of Superheroes have been involved. We've had Luthor, we've had Brainiac, we've had Captain Comet of all things.
Yeah.
You know, who even gets a little mention in here. You know, we've had the Kryptonians in the Phantom Zone. You know, we've had all he's covered all of this stuff, and Nick Spitlick seemed like he was the odd one out, which is why everyone assumed that the little man was going to be Nick Spitlick, and the fact that it turned out to not be him felt kind of weird, because then it meant Nick Spitlick was just sort of left out. And now we know from the fun time bendingness and the nature of five-dimensional life that he is going to mess with him, and he has messed with him already. It just hasn't happened yet for Superman.
Yeah, and that was the mind-blowing part. I'm like, holy crap! That means we still get that!
Yeah, you know, any writer can do that whenever they feel like it.
Yeah, it's like, that can still be there, you know? And it won't matter because Fifth Dimension. I knew that I had, like, gone into mind-blowing territory when I just tried to describe the spear to my wife last night.
There is something about that that makes you want to try and tell somebody about it, isn't there?
It is, because it's like, if you get it, it's awesome. Like, the whole fork thing. And, like, and again, it doesn't pay off until this issue, but in the previous issue, you kind of get the part where it's like, Superman looks at a fork and goes, oh, because of this, you know, it's like, but you can't, if you don't, like, one, if you don't understand Crazy Grant Morrison, and two, if you don't understand multidimensional existence, then, you know.
You don't read comics.
Right. You're kind of screwed. So, is this good? Yeah. I am going to miss this so much.
Seriously, it's still my favorite thing from the New 52. And issues like this just reaffirm that. Whenever I'm left going, I'm not so sure I feel. You know, it's like when I felt like last issue, The Multitude, was a bit of a, it didn't feel like it lived up to the build-up. And now it's like, oh, wait, no, it was actually all this shit. And I'm like, oh, wait a second.
Not only did it live up, but it surpassed the build-up. You know, it was like, it was even more amazing and crazy than you could have ever imagined it was. So good. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's that previous issue.
I love the language of the issue as well. Just Nextly's description of the... I mean, she says, what is it? How should she describe it? She says, what did she say? Where is it? I'm trying to find it. Crap, can't find it. Hang on. She describes
five issues or something.
She's telling the story, and she just says to Clark, 5D words sometimes come out like thunder.
Pierces and his eardrums so much that his ears are bleeding.
Is that what that was?
Yes.
I wasn't sure if that was what that was, or if it was supposed to be him like suffering the injuries that were being inflicted upon him in the future across time, you know?
I took it more of that, but yeah.
I think I was getting a little too tripped up.
Yeah, you may have been a little too...
How does she... It's like she begins the story. This is a story of the fifth dimension. Once upon a time, further than forever and closer than the back of your head, lived the sad King Thing Bripsix of Zrif, the fivefold country. And I'm like, I love it already!
I know, it was brilliant. God. Jeez. I mean, even the image of the place with, like, a water mill on the side of a building that goes into grass, you know?
It's like, what is that? It doesn't matter. Because this is carrying on stuff with the fifth dimension that Morrison did back in his Batman as well, where he took the idea that the fifth dimension is actually the land of imagination, where our imagination just is. Human imagination is this realm.
The idea was like a never-ending story.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, like, they used to say that, you had Batmite back in the day, and then later on they said Batmite was from the fifth dimension, the same as Mrs. Pitlick. So when Batmite appeared in Morrison's Batman, Batman asked him, but he was crazy at the time, are you really an imp from the fifth dimension, or are you just a figment of my imagination? And Batmite told him that the imagination is the fifth dimension, Batman. It was like,
So good. This is good stuff. I mean, I am so glad that I picked this up, you know, beginning to end. And for hating Superman, this has just been awesome. And I am both looking forward to and not looking forward to the next issue.
Yeah, really.
You know, because it's it's going to be good, and yet it's going to be the end of this. And it's just like...
There's something really twisted and annoying about the fact that he's getting to finish his Superman run before he finishes his Batman run.
There is yeah.
We still haven't actually, as much as I say, like, oh, I want him on the ground floor if he's starting something like this, we still haven't even got to the actual end of what he's been doing with Batman.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the themes wrap up with the end of Batman and Robin and the return of Bruce Wayne, but they're not all, it's not all tied off yet. It's not a bow yet. Mm-hmm. We have to get to the end. We have to get the Batman Inc. number 12 before that actually happens.
Yeah. And that's taking
so
forever.
So we'll see how that's going to go. God.
All right.
Have you read any of the Batman Inc., by the way, McPhail?
I haven't read the new Batman Inc. I'm waiting on a trade for that one to go with all my other books.
Yeah. It's been good. I haven't been talking about it, but it's good.
Well, Action Comics is also good, and I tell you to get it, but there's little point now, so get the trade.
Yeah.
Get
the issues are out. It's obviously going to be 2 8-issue books because the first hardcover, beg your pardon, the first hardcover is 8 issues, and it's out now.
Oh, okay.
So get that.
All right. Very good. Then let it be that we shall move on.
It is a Beatles song.
Let it be.
Let it be. As we move on to Avengers issue 1. Now, I have to say, I've been excited about this. You know, we've all really, I think most of us have enjoyed Hickman's work on Fantastic Four. So the fact that he's going to be writing Avengers sounds just totally awesome. And
I
get
for it.
And I think I'll let Chris take us through this, Chris Pufilli, to take us through this because he kind of gets Hickman and likes Hickman. So, but I do have to say, I put the book, I set it down, cover up, and I'm like, interesting cover, okay. Open the first page, and I'm like, fuck, really? Huh. It's like it's like the start of like this epic adventure, you know? It's like unmistakable beginning.
You were not ready.
Unmistakable beginning to Hickman's story here. So, all right, Chris.
Previously in Avengers is how it begins. There was nothing. Followed by everything. Swirling, burning flecks of creation that circled life-giving suns. And then we raced to the light. Well, I guess this is going to be about people sitting around a table eating breakfast.
Well played, sir.
Oh, man. I mean, and like even what they've done to the Avengers logo on the second page.
Man, I love this thing. This is Hickman graphics. You get this. This wasn't really in his Fantastic Four, but it's in everything else he does. It was all over Secret Wars, his own Manhattan Projects. It was in his Ultimates as well. This graphic design that he does for his books, where we start out with a team of Avengers who are, not coincidentally, the movie team. Not that actually like matters or anything, because it's not like they are the Avengers or anything. He's just used that as a jumping on point for movie readers who have come in, you know. And we get this spiraling diagram with emblems representing each of the 6 movie Avengers. Then there are these little arms growing out from their logos, and lots of blank circles, and like.
For some reason, they exclude Black Widow and Hawkeye. Why is that?
No, they don't.
They're not authorized to do that.
What? What do you mean they exclude them?
Well, because they don't have like the little pinpoints that are coming out from it. They're just
They don't have other people there. Yeah. Okay.
But,
yeah.
Is that Black Widow and Hawkeye, or is that Black Widow and Hulk? Because, you know, we don't.
Maybe that is Hulk.
Yeah, I think it's Hulk.
They never do actually tell us what the emblems are, and we'll get to this at the end of the issue again. But, you know, we can tell Captain America from the Star, Thor from the Hammer, Black Widow from the Spider, Iron Man from the Arc Reactor. But there's an H, and there's 2 guys that could be 4. And then there's what it seems to be like an archery target, so presumably that's.
Okay.
You'd think they could have used a molecule or something for the Hulk, you know?
Yeah.
Rather than an H. I mean, it's direct and to the point. So, anyway.
They could have used a big old fist.
That would work too. Oh,
yeah, because that wouldn't look like other things. Anyway.
But you want to talk now about long-term planning. Well, holy crap.
You know, yeah.
We start with a legend that grew in the telling, and the narration just says, some believe it began when the moment Hyperion was rescued from a dying universe. Others said it was when the guard were broken on the dead moon. Many more think it was when Ex Nihilo terraformed Mars, turning the red planet green. They were wrong. It happened before the light, the war, the fall. And you're like, none of this stuff has even happened yet.
Yep, none of it.
Racing towards. This is the light. Well, you know, it's like it seems like it happened before the light. They make it sound like maybe that is the latest point. So we are literally racing toward the light for Hickman's Avengers. Like, it's right there in the first two pages, three pages. We're already mired in metaphor.
Yeah, and yeah. God. You're like, ah! Oh, man.
No. Going to happen. And then I love the way it just like just suddenly sucks itself right back down to two guys. It's Iron Man, it's Captain America. Tony goes and wakes Steve up in the middle of the night and says, yeah, it's time for the Avengers to change. The funny thing here is, though, Tony recalls what they were saying at the party that they had in the last issue of Bendis's Avengers. That's where this happened. I don't know if you guys read that or not, but this did happen. They did have this party, and Steve and Tony were talking. But it was Tony who said that we have to get bigger, not Steve.
Oops.
So I don't know if that's like a miscommunication between writers there, or if that's just Tony trying to
this
pass
off. This
is
another world. It's a whole new world.
Yeah.
This is the second Earth to hear this.
I like the idea, though, that it's, you know how, like, Tony would be the sort of guy who would convince you it was a good idea by pretending you said it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel it. I choose to believe, like, for my no prize, that that's what's going on there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's believable.
And so we get the Avengers World is the title of our first story arc. And this, the bloody doors are off after we have the title. 1 month later, villains we've never heard of before are terraforming Mars, as mentioned in the first couple of panels.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, what?
Keep up, bitches!
God, this is like amazing. I mean, this dude's just terraforming Mars, making Homo sapiens. There's a robot thing that wants to kill everything. Some woman-looking thing that probably isn't, but has this wisp. You're just like, mind exploded!
To sum up, villains known as Ex Nihilo, Abyss, and a robot called Aleph are firing origin bombs at Earth, which are like they explode and they explode. They're like mini big bangs that are just creating life wherever they detonate.
What?
And of course, they're hitting Earth, so the Avengers come in for some action. Then the Hulk comes, just like, well, then the action happens. Ass gets cooked. Hulk is tricked by this Abyss character into fighting Thor, so you get a powerful smackdown. Captain America does some awesome shield bouncing stuff. Thor is almost totally silent, but writ so large, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. You get a real sense of Thor in his silence and power. It's really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And Captain America is the only one who makes it out at the end of it all. It's left with these villains are still in charge of Mars with all the Avengers captive. And, I mean, this is quite a short summary, but it's direct, you know.
I mean, that's it. America, I mean,
yeah. Big read too. Like I read it and I was like, boom, it's already over? What the last longer?
He goes and he triggers this protocol that he and Tony have put into place, Wake the World, which summons all of these characters who are going to be the new Avengers. Or not just new Avengers, but who are going to be Avengers. As the Avengers expand to get bigger and become a real like worldwide force. This is them expanding, and all of these characters respond to Captain America's call. And on the last page, we get spots on the diagram filled in with the symbols of these characters. So there are quite a few yet to come.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know who all of these guys are. That's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, what? Okay, there's Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, Spider-Woman, Spider-Woman, Captain Marvel, Cannonball, Wolverine, Falcon, Sunspot, Hyperion, Eden Facy from Secret Warriors, and a new female Captain Universe.
Mm-hmm. And then that Captain Universe.
Yeah. And then I don't know who this woman in white and black is, and I don't know who this in the black and red on the right is. I don't know who these are.
Yeah. But man.
It'll be interesting.
I mean, it is just the doors are off, you know. And you know the thing that struck me after reading the comic, which was like, when Bendis started on the Avengers 8 years ago, he added all of these strange new characters to the team. Well, I say new characters, I mean like people that weren't Avengers typically, historically, were almost complete antithesis to the notion of the Avengers. And the internet was up in uproar. And Hickman is like, I can do that 10 times. And we have nothing but all of these completely baffling characters.
I love that Cannonball is an Avenger. I don't know why, but what?
It is really it is in many ways like the next most logical step to take with the Avengers, to stop pretending that the Avengers are an isolated team separate from the X-Men or the Fantastic Four or any of the other. The Avengers is practically a fraternity at this stage. It is a huge, encompassing umbrella organization that spans all the superheroes of the Marvel Universe. And that's what Hickman is truly transforming it into. After Bendis took us, you know, towards that direction with his idea of turning it into the heavy hitters group. And really, I mean, it's not like we've never had people on the Avengers before who weren't members of other teams, but, you know, really took it to extremes. Like, Hickman has just made such a transformative step for the team in this one page, which I try as I might. And perhaps it's just because we've gone through this, because Bendis really did wind up redefining what it meant to be an Avenger. It's the way that this final quantum leap for the team can happen in a story that is already doing so much with changing the scope of not changing the scope in the sense that it's altering our understanding of the characters or anything, but the scope is out of control as it is. You know, we already know from these things that things are going to get huge, and the Avengers have to get huge in response to it.
They're going to need a bigger breakfast table.
Yeah.
I would have laughed my ass off if that's how the issue ended, with like Cap saying we're going to need a bigger table.
Assemble at dawn for waffles.
Here we come, a waffling along.
I'll tell you what, though. I have to assume it is just complete and total coincidence, but it's really unfortunate that both China Mayville and Jonathan Hickman decided to do comics with teams of villains whose names are Ex Nihilo and Abyss.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the villain double act of Dial H.
Right.
The story arc of Dial H. The meaning is there's nothing relating to them. Ex Nihilo means from nothingness, and Ex Nihilo and Dial H, her deal was that she actually was a nullomancer. She was actually able to manipulate the stuff of nothing. She used and controlled it. And Ex Nihilo, he's called that because he actually is interested in creating life from nothing. From nothing comes life. And of course, that's the very first panel of the thing. Previously in Avengers, there was nothing. And then from nothing, there was everything. And that's the role Ex Nihilo was playing. I mean, I don't know what scope these villains are going to have, if they are just first arc villains, but I would have to say, I mean, based on what we've opened with, there's probably some deeper significance to these guys. They're pretty cosmic villains. I don't think they are subjects of the week. They might go away. We might not see them for a while, but I'll be surprised if this does not have deep and powerful repercussions. And the art in this is fantastic as well.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, the art's really, really bright.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Just a total success all across the board.
Especially the Mars landing page where, you know, it's like Hulk is taking up most of that panel.
Oh, yeah. That's real classic looking, slightly off kilter, derp faced Jack Kirby Hulk.
Yes, but I like it.
Yeah. You're going to get out of that Hulk's way.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
My only real knock against the book is the kind of Cap armor suit. You know, I don't care for it. Like, I like my classic Cap.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I'm not sure.
But
that. I don't.
It's
I don't
a thing. It's. it's a thing, you know. I mean, basically, that's his suit now. I mean, that's what he's got in Uncanny Avengers, right?
Yeah, it'll only last a while. I think Opinia might.
It will last until the next movie that he appears in, when they rechange his costume for the movie.
That's the thing, though. It doesn't even really look like the film. So that's the weird thing.
Is that guy on the left? Is that Atomic Codpiece, or what is?
That's Hyperion, but he has always looked like that, and he really could use a belt.
Now he's he's Squadron Supreme guy, right?
Yeah,
like the Superman from Squadron Supreme.
Assuming it is that Hyperion.
Yeah.
I mean, it says here, that's one of the early panels, some believe it began the moment Hyperion was rescued from a dying universe. I guess that would mean this was before that? Before this story? So if it began the moment Hyperion was rescued from a dying universe, and then others said it was when the guard, that's the Shi'ar Imperial Guard, as you can see in the panel, were broken on the dead moon. So are we to assume these things have already happened? Because then ex nihilo terraforming Mars happens. That's the issue. And then we jump forward into that's a chronological list of things that have happened from as far back as possible up to now. And then this next page is things that are as far away in the future, the light, and then the war and the fall moving back towards now. Who knows? But I do get the impression that, like, racing to the light is not an accidental metaphor. That whatever the light is, it is where we are headed for this story.
Awesome.
Yeah, and you know what's the best thing of all? 2 weeks and we get another.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is bi-weekly, kids.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And it makes sense, because, like, it ends with, like you said, you know, new Avengers are coming. The next issue is new Avengers. You know?
Yeah. Wow. Don't waste time. And the thing is, I'm really looking forward even to... I mean, my hope was originally that they would reshuffle the Avengers line so you would have just bi-weekly Avengers, and then new Avengers could just go away. But the fact that they've decided to transform new Avengers into an Illuminati book and created, like, an actual distinction between it and Avengers, and give it a real reason to be doing something separate on its own, and they're letting Hickman write that as well... It's good times, and Avengers number one is again one of the strongest out of Marvel now. I don't think it's quite as good as Thor number one, because you're going to be hard pushed to beat that Thor. But
Thor
it
was awesome.
It is really up there. Some truly fantastic art, and you know, not a world of stuff actually happening in the first issue. A lot of it is just fight and florid dialogue, but there are enough like big story hooks going on there that there is absolutely no question about coming back for the next issue.
Yeah. It's awesome. It's what we thought it could be.
Big shock.
You know, there's like a joke in this issue I just realized. Okay, they go to Mars to fight some villains, and they take Black Widow and Hawkeye with them.
Yeah.
There's a joke there somewhere.
I don't know what it is, but it's there. Hey, but Mars has been terraformed now, so they can all breathe. It's fine, no problem.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's not like taking Moon Knight to Mars, like in Secret Avengers.
Oh, God.
It's like, think you could at least got, like, somebody else? I don't know.
Movie cast, gotta go with it.
Yeah, movie cast. Yeah. It's a movie
cast.
What is
the subversive thing about the issue, though, is how... especially after Bendis' really lackluster last year or two on the Avengers books, I think a lot of people, and I'm not going to say I wasn't included in it, because I was, were kind of looking at this as a potential return to classic form for the Avengers. And in reality, it's really not. It honestly is the ideas that Bendis had for the team blown up even bigger. And it's kind of like the proverbial dragon eating its own tail, where we have looped back around to something that's so cosmic and so epic that it does feel like a classic Avengers epic, even though it's technically even further away from where we started than when Bendis completely flipped the breakfast table over with his one. It's not classic. It's not your dad's Avengers, and it's not Bendis's Avengers either. It legitimately is something new, and that's really what I think is most exciting here. It's not just going back and trying to be safe and trying to capture something Bendis' run never did. It's not trying to do more of what he did. It is something new. And it's not like the Avengers are in desperate need of something new right now. Mega blockbuster film, all you would really have to do is just do things like that and put that in the comic. But no, they got somebody with the imagination and the talent to really take this into some exciting, brave new places. And I'm on board.
Yeah. Yeah, this is good. I mean, it's, like I said, it's just as good as we thought it would be. And it's, you know, home run. Yeah.
But Marvel wanted money pretty bad because I dropped Avengers and they got me back.
Yep.
Yeah, you know?
They knew it was like, oh my gosh, we've got to get Chris Triplett back on.
Yeah.
What? How can
You know what's great is how great, like, all the Avengers is now. Because there's no question New Avengers is going to be great too. Avengers Assemble is rocking it now with Kelly Sue DeConnick on there. We just have to wait and see what Nick Spencer does with Secret Avengers. And I mean, this could be a sweep.
It's amazing what happens when you get Bendis out of Avengers. It's
isn't it though? Let's see how the X-Men do.
What would really kill the X-Men franchise?
And I read X-Men this week, and you know what? It's still not there yet. They've just gotten to the point where Cyclops and Cyclops meet. So that's where they're at.
What would really kill the X-Men franchise? Let's put Bendis on it.
Oh, the sales will be huge, and you know.
Yeah, they probably will.
But it really looks like even the Avengers family, like Cap, Iron Man, Thor, these are among the best.
Mm-hmm.
They're good books.
It's a good. I'm not saying like that they're deliberately, because you know you can never engineer how successful something is going to be, but I don't think it's been a long time since it's been this good a time to be reading Avengers, and for this to happen off the heels of the movie is good planning, kismet, whatever the hell it is. It's been a good year for the Avengers.
Yep, it's good stuff.
Yep.
So cool. All right. Well, there you go. There's your books for the weeks. Pick all of those up. For some strange reason, I've read all of the books that we talked about this week. And so I can personally say that they are...
You act like you actually like comics.
I know. That's odd.
According to JD, pick up Moloch, because it's the best miniseries.
I don't know about pick it up. If it somehow falls in your hands, read it. But,
if you come across a burning copy, you don't have to lower your fly, you know.
Right. It is not the atrocious thing I thought it would be, but it's also not like run out and buy it, you know. So, but you should get Earth 2, because that's picking up, and that could be fun. We can have multiverse crossover. I'm excited about this. So, all right.
Comics are good. I'm proud of that.
Yeah. So, all right, very good. Well, then, we are marching ever closer to the end of the month, which means we are marching ever closer to the end of the year, which means we are marching ever closer to our best of the year. So please get us your recommendations, tweet them to us, email them to us. If you don't tell us, maybe something that's really good, we'll forget about. So let us know your recommendations for stuff that you think needs to be in our end of the year best of coming up.
And as an added incentive, we haven't finalized any plans now, but you guys remember what we were talking about last week. We don't do the digital thing much, the four of us. So we have a lot of spare digital codes floating around stuck in the back of our Marvel comics. So we're not saying there's definitely going to be prizes or raffles or anything for people who might send in their suggestions for end of the year, but we're not saying there aren't going to be.
Won't be. You might. It's possible you can get some digital issues and some stuff. It's probably not a red, so think about that. So, all right.
We got four right now just on the Avengers 1.
I know. There's Avengers, there's Spider-Man, all these issues of Spider-Man we've been talking about. So,
Is it every issue that's $4 that has a code in it? Yeah. Is that the only one?
In Marvel, yeah. Do you see this? We can't offer you much in the way of DC, folks. But,
right.
$4 Marvel book has a digital code we don't ever wind up using.
Yep. So. Very cool. So, yes, that is a good thing. We're not saying, but we're just saying.
Email address, JD?
So, yep. So, So tweet us at FanboyVS or go to the website, fanboyversus.com. There's a link there to send us an email, which you can do as well. And also go to the website to get just show and everything. And don't forget we have an Android app as well. So if you have an Android phone, you can download the app. The app will alert you when we have a new episode up and ready to go, and you can download it and listen to it wherever you are on your Android device. Sorry, we're not on iOS. But anyway, you know, it's on iTunes.
Nobody has an iPhone anyway.
It's on iTunes. What do you want from us? So anyway, that is our show. Thanks so much for tuning in, and please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus... Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.